Malibu Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bridging the Future, an evening with 2015 Youth Poet Laureate Contest winners, Friday, October 23rd from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Zoomtopia in Portland. This event will feature performances by the poets Alexis Cannard and Saki Edwards, as well as Tyler White and Baki from the What Do You Want to Do crew and Spit Right Youth Poet Project, and a conversation facilitated by Mike Crenshaw between the artists and the audience, reflecting the connections between art, culture, politics, community, and cross-generational solidarity. Again, that's Bridging the Future, an evening with 2015 Youth Poet Laureate Contest winners, Friday, October 23rd from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Zoomtopia, 810 Southeast Belmont Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm Sonny Blechinger, KBOO's Artist in Residence for 2015. I hope you'll tune in on October 29th at 10 p.m. for my radio play, The Pool. It's about four people that happen to swim at the same public pool every week. And even though they don't know each other, they've mostly decided they don't like each other. And you get to hear their thoughts.
I don't know what I was thinking. Swimmy, this is horrible.
So please tune in for the, well, the world premiere, really, of The Pool on October 29th. At 10 p.m. It'll be fun, like swimming.
People love swimming in the crystal plunge.
God, that creepy lifeguard is still staring at me.
Okay, let's just put the stuff down and...
This is my time. My time in the pool.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Camille Perry, and this is Talking Earth. Tonight, I am featuring two poets who I've been privileged to know for a number of years through a lot of readings that we've done together, readings that I've gotten to host them at, and the like. With me tonight is Brenda Talby and Leah Rayner. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi.
Ooh, very nervous, it would seem.
We don't actually have to say anything through this, right?
Like. I mean, you can. tonight, they're going to share work from each of their books. They both came out with books within the last year. They're going to talk to us about their process a little bit, tell us more about themselves, just have a little chat between three old friends, if we can do that. Brenda, let's talk about you first. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
You're doing all right. What would you like to tell people about yourself?
Well, I live in Portland, Oregon, and I write here as well. I just came out with my book, The Art of Waking Up, in April, and I've been cruising around doing shows, promoting it here and there. Doing that thing.
Brenda and I have something in common. We are both former residents of the grand state of Montana. Hopefully we have some friends back home listening to us right now. Maybe they're asleep.
At least my mother.
At least your mother. Wonderful. Brenda, would you like to open us up with a piece?
I would love to. So we're going to go with the title poem for my book. It's called The Art of Waking Up. Every year, with the predictability of seasons, my brother grows me a new crop of sleepless nights. His body becomes grapevine, heavy with cellular accumulation. He incubates hard marbles of tissue in the hollow of his throat where I keep my poems and memories. Imagine surgeon's fingers delicately plucking the ripe and rounded sickness from the tiny sleeping form. He handles the tumors delicately, easily bruised fruit. He asks us if we'd like to see them, but we don't. It's easier to imagine the body as trellis, entangling green. My brother was 11 and a half pounds at birth, his body graceless from the moment it twisted fractured into this world. His bones learned the lesson of contortion. Cracking beneath the dual clench of pelvis and gravity, he knew pain before he knew to breathe. After each operation, he teaches me the language of blind faith, the art of waking up. His sleeping body curls into itself like a question mark. I am still looking for the answers.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you.
Hi, Leah.
Hi, Camille.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little under the weather, but thanks for asking. Leah, what would you like to tell us about yourself?
I am a poet, among other things, in Portland. I've been writing since I can remember. It's funny to me sometimes that I get to do it now in front of people. It's kind of always been my way of escaping things and expressing things, as I think is the case for a lot of people who write. And I'm excited to be here today to get to share it with whoever is out there.
Leah, what's the name of your book and when did it come out?
I just finally printed it last week, and it's called Literary Voyeurism.
Okay. Very nice. Well, would you like to share a piece with us?
If we're starting with title pieces, I'll start with that. Poems are like lovers. Words like limbs, mangled among another. Incomprehensible to whom which belongs, but dare to look a little closer. A little literary voyeurism, and the simile's smile begins to beguile like a wanderlust gypsy with a heart full of joy, hidden under a cloak of pious coy, luring a lover ever so close. Daring you to read the next stanza, and you can feel her breath, soft breast pulsing to the beat of her own humanity. In your own vanity, turn not away from the ultimate personification of climax.
Very nice. I like that, going with the theme. So, ladies, which one of you would like to talk a little bit? We were talking before the show, and Leah, I think it was you that had the, you were comparing the three of us and our connection to what again?
To an octopus.
To an octopus.
Or, right. Or a sorority, or I mean, which are similar in their own right.
Would you like to explain to people where that idea comes from?
So Curtis White Carroll is a, what do you call him? Poet mafia boss?
Poet mob boss, yeah.
Yeah. Of Portland, and knows a lot of people, and so he runs these poetry shows that often are in this format of he invites three people who each invite three people who hopefully are new poets, and from there they get sort of sucked into the monster that this can be sometimes. And so I think before I was a part of the picture, Camille had been invited by Curtis, who invited Brenda. Mm-hmm. And then sometime after that, Brenda was invited by Curtis, who invited me. Mm-hmm. And then Brenda and I also have a friend, Sarah, who is sort of the last of our tentacle, if you will. So if Curtis is the head of the octopus, to bring it back to the metaphor, we are this lovely tentacle, and I think he has lots of other tentacles.
Probably.
Not
I see Patrick in there kind of chuckling and nodding his head.
Poetic tentacles. Nice name for a label.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, it's a fun tentacle that we hang out on.
It's a pretty fun tentacle. Yeah. I did my first reading for Curtis's Stone Soup series, the very first Stone Soup, actually, in December of 2011. Mm-hmm. And that was my whole introduction to reading poetry live. I just got asked by a friend, actually. And then, it was... Was it my book release reading, Brenda?
I think it was your feature reading, September 2012.
Yep.
Got up and read words about casserole for the first time on a stage in front of people. And
oh, man. Do you have that poem with you?
I think I have that poem with me in my brain somewhere. Let me see. I think I can make that one happen.
All right.
The night our friendship fell down the stairs and died from internal complications,
Upon its final heartbeat, I discreetly wrapped my clean white sheets around our shared past, neatly tucked it away to complete the funeral rites in my kitchen, replete with euphemisms and jello salad. You ask why the good die young, and I hold my tongue because it's the right thing to do. Tater tot hot dish seals my mouth like glue, and I remember you once told me you can't eat anything in casserole form because the taste reminds you of death. So I watched you drink yourself to the brink every night and never think twice about the taste of dying. Did it feel like flying, your body complying with the gravity of reality, my stairwell wrecking hell on your bruisable peach shell? You said the pain reminded you of childhood, like that was a good thing. This winter, I watched your features pull tight against their frame, roadmap veins painting the way to all of your nameless insecurities. Huddled in my living room, you wear dark glasses. I tell you, everybody has daddy issues. You tell me, fuck off. Slurred words hurled like sticks and stones, not to break my bones, but to open my eyes. I reply with that comfortable lie, it's all gonna be fine. What I mean is, I can't fix this. So I mix us another drink and we sink back into that slow blinking state of sleeping wakefulness. We wear dark glasses. We ignore the internal bleeding. We never eat casserole.
I've always loved that piece of yours. I love that one. I don't know why.
The first.
That's classic the first. Brenda Talby.
And it is a classic Brenda Talby. Do you have poems about casserole, Leah?
I don't think I have any poems about casserole. I was thinking, though, when we were like kind of remembering all of our first encounters with each other and poetry and reading and remembering the first time that I met Brenda was on the floor of a dive bar, and not literally on the floor.
Maybe literally on the floor.
It's entirely possible.
We were talking, and somehow poetry came up, and I was like, oh, yeah, I write poetry. And she was like, yeah, prove it. And I was like, no, I do. And she was like, read a poem. And I just have this, like, a weird, I just memorize things weirdly. I don't try, but I do. So anyway.
Doesn't sound like me at all.
Of course.
So anyway, we're in the middle of this, like, loud, smelly bar. And I'm like, okay, here's a poem. And I started telling this poem, and it's the same one that I think was also one of the first ones I told you, so, and it's the first one in the book, so I could read that.
Do that. Let's hear it.
I wrote this, most of it in my head, when I had first moved to Portland, and it had first started raining for the season, and I got my first flat on my bike, and was walking it over the Burnside Bridge, and it was raining, and it was just like this whole, but it in this weird way felt like this really sort of like I made it kind of moment. Right. Like,
like, I'm a real Portlander now. Yeah.
So anyway, I generally call it November. I found my soul again. She was sitting by the river, spitting poems off bridges with people whose only riches are their words and their spare change jars. The seasons shift to golden brown, muddled gray. I'll stay here. Let the wind shake my bones clean. Let the rain hang my mind out to dry. My chest has been tight for so long, but I still know breathing doesn't work like this. Love doesn't work with clenched fist, so I take reprieve. The trees are losing leaves now. The puddles reflect what I suspect is at the heart of this. The art of seeing isn't about looking around you, but looking up instead, because what pours from rain clouds is what forms you. We have nebulas in our eyes. When a cell is born, it looks the same as when a star dies. We are stardust and rhymes. We are hurricanes and fireflies. We are brilliant truths, seated in lies. I found my soul again. She was skipping stones down the river, waiting for all the cars to go by.
I feel like I've actually specifically requested that piece of you for a couple of different things. I love that poem so much. So... All right, guys. I guess I'll start with Brenda. How did you end up releasing a book in April? What is the process that led to that?
Your guess is as good as mine, honestly. So Leah talked a little bit about our poet mob boss, Curtis, mm-hmm. earlier. And I had my first reading with Curtis in 2012. And after that first reading, he kept Facebook messaging me. And it would just be like, hey, insider tip, you should send work to this magazine or this publication coming out. Or, hey, see if these people want to have you come and read for them. And he did that with a publication, a local and international publication called Gobshite Quarterly. So I rounded up some pieces and sent a bunch of them over to RV, the editor over there, and he emailed me back and just said, yes, I want them all. I have room for one in this edition. Can we string out the rest between the next three editions? It's good. We want it. And I said, yeah, take it. Sure. Yeah. And so that's how RV and I were first introduced. And then sometime after that, he ended up coming to a reading of mine and hearing a few of the pieces out loud. And after that, he said, I want more. Show me what you've got. And I kind of sent over everything that I had. And he said, yeah, we can make a book out of this. I said, all right, let's make a book out of it. And didn't really take it seriously until January or so of this year. He said, so the book's coming out in April. Do you want to start getting some edits in? And I said, oh, that's real. That's happening. And then it was crunch time. But
I remember.
Just pure panic. Lots of frenzied editing sessions and
in matching purple shirts.
Yeah, me and Leah ended up going to a sports bar and drinking beer in matching purple shirts, like hunched over pages of poetry, just scribbling in the dark. Like, no, we care about the sportsing, but we're here for the beer.
Very nice. Would you say that that's pretty typical of your editing process?
What process?
What process?
I'd say the biggest thing with this book, actually, more so than editing the content of the actual poems, because the book is full of poems that I've had for 3 years or so and have been reworking and retooling consistently throughout that. So my biggest concern was order and making sure that each of the poems got to play off of each other and feed into each other and leave you with kind of the overarching message that I wanted to purvey.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you share another piece with us?
Okay, so the friend that the casserole poem is about, I have another poem for that same person, and I promised myself in my head that I would never read the first one without also reading the second one.
Gotcha.
There is a girl back home who smells like powdered sugar. Her lips are a berry patch in the middle of summer. When she kissed me, it tasted like whiskey and childhood. Her mouth like an open field of grain, small straight teeth planted like mile markers for my tongue to follow. The first boy she ever loved was her childhood friend, and I never really knew him, but I liked to pretend he was soft-spoken with the tanned hands of a Montana farm boy, leaning like a long drive on backcountry roads. On the nights I was a jukebox, she knew all my saddest songs. She always sang along with her eyes closed like she could open them somewhere far away. Back then, we were always afraid of becoming our fathers or our mothers' daughters or just more fodder for the everyday traipsing, clueless into the future. I have loved her. And on the nights my thoughts stretch thinner than the moonbeams we used to hold like prayers, I want to tell her, don't ever let them get you down. You are more than the small town parades and grass stains that you carry in your veins. You are not the plunder of the wars you survived. You are the country they were fought in. And even on the days you can't take a breath that doesn't feel like lost ground, your hands are a roadmap. Your heart is a full tank of gas. Your smile is 500 miles of open road. There is a boy out there who didn't show you how to break, but how to shake the dust from the rubble of each mistake and shape something beautiful from the clay you create. I know you fancy yourself a sandcastle, but I've seen you stand solid in the face of more waves than you realize. Stay alive. Keep drinking in those big blue skies like Lake Missoula wouldn't satisfy your thirst. You are not the first girl I have loved. I'm not the first kiss you whispered across a fevered cheek like a promise. But I think about you when the sun shines, just so. And I think you should know you are beautiful like red wine in a mason jar. And on the nights, I'm a jukebox, tossing love songs like rocks against the window of the moon. I still spill ablutions across the ground of every new hometown, hoping you found some semblance of peace.
Lovely. I don't know that I've heard that one before. I like it.
Why, thank you.
All right, Leah. So what can you tell us about your process to a book? It came out when again?
Just last week.
So
I guess maybe 2 weeks ago, if officially.
Officially
2 weeks ago, and then, yeah.
Okay. And what can you tell us about how you arrived with a pretty little chapbook?
So I've been writing for a long time and reading for a few years. Poetry for me has always been something that I speak a lot more, and I've always felt kind of uncomfortable with figuring out how to make it look on a page. I've never really studied poetry. I don't know a lot of the logistics of that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I just resonate more with it when I'm speaking it. And so I would go to these readings, and every now and then somebody would say, like, oh, do you have a book? And I was, oh, no, I don't have a book. I don't do that. And then I don't know what happened. Something happened one day back in, I don't know, springtime. Mm-hmm. And I was at a reading, and afterwards it was one of Curtis's readings. He's like the secret star of this show.
You were talking with me, actually, I think.
Oh, me,
that
really?
Day, yeah.
Was I saying, maybe I'm going to make a book? Uh-huh. Well, so I went up to Curtis afterwards and I said, like, hey, if you wanted to make another book of somebody and you wanted to make one of my things, we could do that, maybe. That would be fun. And he said, sure, yeah, send me your things. And probably a grueling amount of months later for him, I sent him some things, and we were working on that. And it became this really exciting thing that I didn't think I would feel as invested in as I ended up feeling. Mm-hmm. And so then towards the end of it, with kind of just wanting to carry my integrity through with the piece, I got handsy with it, I guess. took it on myself, and so it's a very small, like, it's just self-published. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's okay, because really my reason for making it in the first place was that I wanted something tangible to hold on to remember, like, whether I do this for the rest of my life or not, I have this thing that I'll remember. Mm-hmm. Whether I remember the poems themselves or not. Mm-hmm. And that's really the only reason I did it.
That makes sense. I have heard people ask many times if you had books, so I'm glad that people can finally get a hold of them. How does one go about getting a book from
By
you?
By coming to one of my readings.
Oh.
Because I don't have a barcode or ISBN, or, you know, I'm not fancy here, folks. My growing up in my childhood, my mom's listening, she'll appreciate this. She's not
just
listening.
To chime in for a second, I'm not sure if Powell's requires an ISBN number.
Ooh.
Oh, maybe I'll go.
You might want to go talk to the small press people there and just check it out.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, that would be fun.
Stay tuned, folks. I'll let you know when it's available at
maybe
Powell's.
Maybe it'll be at Powell's. Well, I was going to tell some goofy story.
About being a kid.
About being a kid, and we have this saying about in my neighborhood that we're just brownies and pudding folk, because we would talk about family barbecues or neighborhood barbecues, and like some other neighborhoods, they bring over all these like fancy desserts and fancy things, and like not us, like we're just brownies and pudding folk, which became this metaphor for like everything. when my mom replaced our garage door with a fancy garage door, the neighbor was like, "What are you doing? Like, this is brown. That's not brownies and pudding. That's nice." So my book is very brownies and pudding, y'all.
Well, read us some brownies and pudding then. All right.
Well, you know what? Since I was just talking about my mom, I'll just read. I just wrote this and I haven't memorized it, so I'm going to read it off this paper here. It's a poem I wrote about my mom because I've been trying to write about her for a long time. She's a good lady. One of my earliest memories. Tiptoed on the toilet seat, small body hung over the edge of the sink, watching the toothpaste drip from your mouth. I watched you brush your teeth, and I wondered how you could brush and spit at the same time. I remember. A little taller now, standing by you, my head just the right height to press into your belly, bathroom mirror. You look down at me, brush a bit of rouge on my cheek, nose, smile. I let you paint me, call me beautiful, like you. I remember. First day, first grade, the hot curlers pinned into my hair. Look how pretty your long curls are. I cut a slit into my dress that day to test how sharp my scissors were. You didn't yell. I remember. Lanky teenage legs. Your medicine chest full of creams to smooth over all the places that time has tried to carve beauty into you. This is how you line your eyes. This is how you conceal. I remember. A whole head taller than you now. Winter storms came early that year. I spent a lot of time letting my eyes trace the outline of the crack in the kitchen linoleum. I didn't sleep much. You didn't know why I was still yelling. My body, something like a woman's, shook that night. You pressed my head into your belly. I told you the truth. I remember. From across the country now. I listened to the voice recording on your answering machine because hearing your voice reminds me how it feels to hug you, but this time you pick up. We laugh. Probably about the neighbor or something else. My hair is short. I tug on my boy's t-shirt, no makeup, girlfriend. Before I said goodbye, you told me I was beautiful. You told me I was beautiful. No one says that word anymore. You told me I was beautiful and I was everything you ever could have hoped for. I remember.
Aww. Hi, Mom.
Aww.
That's really cute.
Hi, Mom.
So I guess one of the questions that I get a lot as a writer and that I'll pose to you guys is, how do you feel like you generate material? How do you feel like, you know, this thing called a poem strikes you? I guess I'm going to start with Brenda and just hear what you have to say about that. Oh, she's given me a look. I wish I had video feed.
How do I word?
How do you word?
How do I word? In my sleep, usually. I always love when I wake up in the morning and know that I was writing in my sleep, and I'll be left with just like the remnants of an image or just the first few words of a line, and it's something that sticks in my brain and that won't go away, and that it forces me to kind of confront it and work through it. And after those first few words, an image will form, and I'll have three sentences, and then based off of that, I build up and I build down until there are stanzas surrounding it, and it can be this really long kind of organic process where image or idea builds and builds and builds, and then 6 months later, I have something that is passable, and then I'll sit down and be like, okay, let's make sure that it's actually seamless and fits together and is one coherent idea. And then other times I'll go out to sit in my car on a lunch break and a fully formed poem just falls out of me. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even know I was pregnant. Like, where did that come from? It's But it is something really natural and something that's not really disciplined into me. I don't have a process for sitting down and writing an hour every day or really it's just what needs to come out does.
Gotcha. I remember when we tried to force ourselves into that like really rigid writing every day. It's ideal, but I'm not great at following through on that, and I know you weren't great either.
God, no.
How about you, Leah? Where would you say your writing comes from?
God, I don't know. it's like this out of body experience usually. And it comes out of totally out of nowhere. Like, where did
you didn't know you were pregnant?
Yeah, absolutely. And so a lot of times it's like when I'm walking, and I think there's something with like a rhythm of walking that will make it happen. So it just sort of comes, and I sort of just like get it all on paper and just go until it stops. And then sometimes I feel like, but I'm not done, but I don't have anything more to say. So I have to figure out how to make that be done. Mm-hmm. Endings are usually my hardest part. And sometimes though it ends up being cool and I can find a way to end it that ties it back up to the beginning, and that's a fun way to do it. And then I have other things like what I just read about my mom, and like that kind of came out in one sitting also, but I've been wanting to write about her, and there's a million things I could write about her. And I've tried before and nothing ever really like worked right. And there have been other things that I've like, oh, I really want to write about this, but I just don't know how, and nothing would work. And maybe I'd end up with these like scraps of different things and find ways to meld them together eventually into one kind of coherent thing. So that happens sometimes too. But generally I would say it's kind of like a one shot deal.
Yeah.
And I don't even really change too much.
I have a tendency toward that myself. I don't know. Sometimes if it comes out right the first time, if it ain't broke, don't fix it idea. Who's going to give me more words now?
I was just thinking, so I went through a spell where I had really terrible writer's block and nothing was coming to me, and I was feeling really stagnant and like I was just gonna explode if I didn't write something, but couldn't write anything. So I went through my notes in my phone that I had been leaving myself for the past 6 months, and I just spliced it down into sentences and threw them all into a pile and arranged them into a thing, and I'm gonna read you that. I have the thing. She snaps a picture, captions it, "Welcome to the horror show," meaning strip clubs on a Wednesday night, meaning streetlights muddying her not quite white sheets, meaning strangers are the saddest thing, with their small hands, dark hair, with their mouths like unheard prayers. When did we begin this insufficient lexicon for so vast an idea? Low-level happiness with no reason for being except another person's headlong falling into every never after until you couldn't you anymore. After each war, I was more fluent in apologies than common sense. So she tallied the score of each carelessness into her kneecaps, wrenched heartbeat from vein, quicksilver clot, slick silver fish caught skipping stones. She said, "I want to see your plasma." So I traced the word insatiable into her shoulder blades. That year, I learned to drink ignorance and forgot how to pray. But today, I want to wake as more than the rattle in your house full of mirrors. Knowing love is not the antidote to this persistent pulse still makes the throb a little slower. And while my friends polish their words on my bones, I consider the mystery of a woman on the bus. Kitten sweater clad, rapping bad Kanye lyrics under her breath. Somehow, that's poetry. Dear world, please don't apologize for your crazy. Instead, dream of me wearing only words, this body of work, a dead hawk sprawled like sunrise on the roadside, or the older poet with the eyes I could have drowned in. But I never leave a glass half full.
But shells never sing any louder than my own blood. Their mouths like cathedrals for confessions to echo through. And when I die, I hope every prayer on my tongue sounds like combustion.
Ooh, I like that. That's really cool. I was going to ask you a question. I'm really, my brain is not working very well with the snot that is trapped in it. I apologize.
Delicious.
Well, you know. Leah, would you like to share another piece with us?
Yeah, I'm just going to just keep piggybacking on Brenda. And so I have something that's also from when I had all these scraps of things, and how do I tie this together into one thing so that I can feel like I wrote a poem. A series of love letters and other reminders from my bedroom mirror. Dear Leah, on Sundays I watch the sun come up through slated shades, drawing diagonal shadows across your stretched out body. The skin you so often cringe to live in, draped gently over each curve, gloriously holding all that is you in one human bundle that is just the right size. Dear Leah, when you pick the same pants up off the floor that you left stepped out of the night before and pull them up over and around your waist, I will always think your butt looks good. But more importantly, I'll remember how you looked last night. Exhausted. Honest. Your bloated belly finally let loose. It's okay to hold the full moon in your womb, feel it pull at your ribcage like a riptide, and paint your thighs a massacre. Look at all of the beautiful ways you woman. Dear Leah, I saw you out the corner of my eye. You've been singing the same song, playing the same two chords for years now. Starting to sound pretty good when you close your eyes and forget for a moment all the times you told yourself you couldn't. It's sounding pretty good now. Dear Leah, the only thing more cliche than a love poem is a sad poem. Nobody wants to hear how your soul aches. Nobody wants to know how many tally marks are carved in the backside of your ribcage, marking each time your heart tried to beat its way out. Do not tell them about the days you spend undressed, pinching at your hips, searching for escape holes, hold the bourbon in your fist. Do not let them see you shake. Dear Leah, I will love you no matter how many sad poems you write. No matter how you tremble at the sheer weight of your own sense of self, I will love you. Don't cut yourself short and call this poem vanity. You are beautiful. Exactly how you are. And I love you. Yours truly.
Yay. I love that piece as well. I had no idea that that was a cobbled together one.
No, me either.
I never had any idea. I've heard that poem.
Maybe you just pretend it's a bunch of letters.
That's true. Maybe I should try that.
There you go.
Hashtag pro tip.
Leah's dropping some knowledge bombs on us.
Surprise.
Surprise. Do either one of you have any readings coming up? Anything
Brenda
happening?
I do, yes. I'm going to be reading at the official unofficial after party to Wordstock, which is in the Jack London Bar under the Rialto on November 7th. At 7 p.m.
Awesome.
I'll be there with a bunch of ladies from the Unchaste Readers series. Very exciting.
Shout out to Jenny Forrester and Unchaste.
We love her.
We love Jenny.
Love Jenny Forrester.
Jenny Forrester.
Jenny Forrester.
She just has such a lovely name, too. Well, Brenda, will you word some more for us?
I can word some more. Any requests?
Known breaker of broken things.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Good call.
That's a request.
Good call.
I like the part about the remote.
We clearly have spent far too much time with each other's poetry.
I had earlier suggested that Brenda and I just read each other's poems.
I actually almost suggested
this
that to you guys.
Around, because we've read together quite a bit.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Leah, if you wanted to get it started while I find it in the book. All right. I am a known breaker of broken things. I can guarantee the permanent dismantling of anything even moderately salvageable. While gluing the handle back on your favorite mug, I will undoubtedly manage to chip the rim. Patching your jeans, I'll blow a seam, rendering them unwearable. Listen. Next time you're on your hands and knees, digging through the dust bunnies, searching for those lost batteries, you will regret the day I offered to fix the remote control. See, I inevitably managed to crack the plastic snap off the back, that delicate tab meant to hold everything together. I'm not the best at keeping it together. My dad was the kind of guy who'd give you a reason to cry if he couldn't supply a full alibi for every single tear. Complaints about scraped knees or bee stings earned a twofold return in his currency of pain, teaching a younger me the most efficient means to overcome one agony is replacing it with another. I don't mean to be blunt, but the force of trauma was the only lesson I ever learned from love. I will be a kick in the ribs when what you needed was someone to kiss it better. Darling, I can see the seams where your delicate dreams are knitting themselves back together, so please don't offer me those parallel lines. Scar tissue rungs strung across your upper thighs, the ladder you climb to escape each personal hell. Don't tell me the history of your body, the trajectory and delicacy of stick-thin child limbs, how plaster walls elastically absorb the full weight of you after Mom had one too many gin nightmares. You are porcelain, and these hands were tempered in concrete. Your wings might be a bit bent, it's testament to the turbulence they've underwent, but they are healing. Don't tempt me to fix you. I am a known breaker of broken things.
I love that poem.
Oh, shucks.
guys in your oldies.
Yeah. I mean, we know what we like. What can I say? Leah, will you give us a new poem? I want a newer poem from
Leah. I just read you my newest one.
Well, I want another one.
Oh, I almost said that word. I'm not allowed to say
fudge.
Please don't say that.
I didn't say it. I just sighed in a way that started with F.
Yeah. No, it's fine. We're okay. If you need time to stall, the voice of God has things to announce. But
ooh, I would love to hear words from the voice of God.
Okay, well, at the errant voice of God, who forgot earlier to plug this event that he's supposed to host, is next Monday at Soundgrounds Cafe, Show and Tell Gallery features Carla Perry, the owner of Dancing Moon Press, and I believe she's not related to you.
Not related to me, no.
No, but it's the infamous Carla Perry. Leanne Grable, who was an owner of Cafe Lena, which is kind of famous, if any of you are... No, it's okay. trust me, Cafe
We're all
Lena.
Too new.
I was actually I actually hosted an open mic there once for a little while. Got roped into being the MC for a while. And then Mary Slocum, they're all reading at Soundgrounds next week. And then I do have another announcement that is related to Talking Earth.
What else?
Barbara Lamorticella is reading at November 2nd at Broadway Books at 7 p.m. as part of the anthology Raising Lily Ledbetter, Women Poets Occupy the Workspace. And
oh,
she's also
cool.
reading on November 5th, Mother Foucault's Bookshop, Thursday, 7 p.m.
Okay, good to know.
And Voice of God needs to go away now.
All right. Thank you, Patrick, a.k.a. the Voice of God. I suppose at this time I'll go ahead and tell everybody about the two events that I saw information about online. Every Tuesday, Josh Lubin hosts Salon Skid Row down at the Corner Bar attached to the Rialto. Tomorrow, he's going to have Carrie Cohen, Monica Drake, and Emily Chenoweth, it would look like. The doors for that show are at 7. The show is at 8. There's always a great open mic beforehand, usually ample time for anybody and everybody to share words if they would like to. Always a great show. And then coming up on October 30th is Sean Aaron Bauer's show, Them's Fightin' Words, out at St. John's Booksellers. The theme this go around is no zombies here. So of course that's going to be phenomenal. He's going to have Amy Zimmerman, Robin Bateman, and Robert Lashley out reading for his show. That also starts with an open mic. That show is October 30th at 6:30 p.m. Another really fantastic show. Well worth going to. So now that we're done talking about all of the events, I would like to fit in as many poems as I can from these guys.
All right. I narrowed it down.
She narrowed it down.
There are lots of hand gestures behind the mic.
We did some, like, sign language and things. So I'm going to let you pick my topic here.
Oh.
I can read you a poem about technology, etc. I think
is it that one?
Yeah, I think you like that one. Or I have one that's a little bit newer, and I was like reading it a lot when I first wrote it, and I haven't read it in like at least 2 or 3 readings, but it's about like this conversation that happens a lot in Portland around gender. And
that's a really good one too.
Or just both of them.
I can do that.
Why don't you go ahead and give me the technology one first, and then we'll do the other one after that.
I always give this little like preface story about that one. When I got my first ever Apple i device, it was an iPod Touch, and I was really excited because like all my friends were on Instagram, and I could Instagram as long as I had Wi-Fi, because it was an iPod Touch and not a cell phone. And I just thought it was called an iTouch, and so I like had all these big feelings about that for some reason, and started writing a poem about it. And later found out that it's actually called an iPod Touch, and like Apple geeks are really really like particular about that. So anyway, the beginning of this poem is related to me thinking that this thing in my hand was called an iTouch. I touch, therefore I am. I am touched 3 times before lunch with a wholehearted thumbs up. I am liked by people despite not having seen them in years or ever even liking them in the first place. I erase my human errors with a swift move to backspace, back to my 16th birthday when I lost all of my fondest memories by deleting my MySpace, which I quickly replaced gracefully with a password for Facebook. I upload a profile, look how pretty when she smiles, and miles away from my closest old contacts, I'm technically able to make good on all of my contracts. BFF4E, best friends forever. Forever, I won't let go of you, ever. I get to know what you had for breakfast, what you wore last night, where you bought that coffee, who your mom is. I get to know all about your mother, thanks to Facebook. So, let's interface. Text me, love me, love the soft curves of my status updates. It's fate. Okay, Cupid? Please, forgive my apparent lack of eye contact. I never learned face-to-face combat. I can't emote without an icon, and I might forget you if I don't have my Nikon. If I can't hear you, it's because you don't have the mic on. This is the romantic eloquence of the millennial generation, so I'll click, till there's a technical difficulty, and so much is plugged in, we'll just have to restart.
Nice. I remember the first time you read that piece, it was right after you'd written it, and how excited I got about it afterward. It's clever. I've been trying to work with that idea for ages, and you just went ahead and took over, handled it. No big deal. Brenda, what would you like to share with us next?
I thought Leo was going again.
Mm. Not yet.
All right, let's do this one because I love it. I was the last person to see you alive. Bloodied nose in a dive bar bathroom stall, hands like chaliced claws cupped to accept your body's offering. Back then we measured boosts in fists instead of fingers, swinging cheap shots at anyone who dared to love us. I guess not much has changed.
The first time, I almost lost my front tooth. I thought I was Superman after downing a can of Four Loko in your Jeep's back hatch. You tried to catch me on the way down, but I was so sure I could fly, arms at my sides, chin stretched skyward. You carried me inside after I knocked myself unconscious. The first time I almost broke my back, I mixed a rack of PBR with a friend's trampoline, straining to be airborne. I didn't see the ground coming until it was knocking the wind out of me, earth spinning at speeds my creaky knees could never hope to achieve. These bones have always ached to be hollow. So I swallow cheap liquor. It makes my tongue thicker, but my head feels light like the balloons we'd cling to at childhood birthday parties. Remember when we tied all those strings to our wrists, wistfully longing to overcome gravity, never realizing we were only tethering otherwise free things. I was the last person to see you alive. Nose bleeding apologies, the way my apologies bled ignorance, and in that instant, I swear I loved you. The way injuries love crutches, the way homeless men love park benches, the way our lungs love their next breath, which is to say, incidentally, out of necessity, you were the next breath I couldn't accept gracefully, and after you leave, I won't remember the exact press of my hand against your cheek, but I imagine it's the way gravity cradles airplanes, going against my nature to keep you aloft.
Mm. Hooray. That poem's been around for quite a while too, hasn't it?
It has, at least a couple years now. Mm-hmm.
Was that in Dances with Bears, your first book?
It was not. It was like the next poem that I wrote after Dances came out.
Gotcha.
And I was like, I'm going to write about something new. No, I'm not.
Brenda, I don't know if we really talked... Did you mention to people where they can get a hold of your book?
I did not. So my book is available on Amazon. If you type in Brenda Talby, Art of Waking Up, it pops up. It's also available at Powell's downtown, and I believe Mother Foucault's currently.
Very nice.
And I hustle it out of my backpack, so if you ever see me on the streets, it's there.
It's probably there.
Guaranteed.
All right, Leah, would you like to share that other poem with us?
Sure. I can do, yes.
Or would you, is there something else you'd rather share?
I'm worried about this one because I didn't practice it. And sorry, she might mess up.
Oops.
All right, I'm just going to try. I am tired of talking about gender. I am tired of being asked if I'm the boy in my relationships, and when I ask them why they would think that, being told it's because I stand up for myself. I am tired of talking about gender. I am tired of patient conversations with cisgender white men who just aren't good at pronouns and don't understand why it really matters anyway, who don't know how to wrap their lips around something that isn't easy because everything has always been easy for them, and it's hard to discern the taste of privilege when it's been spoon-fed to you your whole life. Aren't we all the same, though? Really? We aren't all the same, though. Really? People don't question your identity if you don't shave all the hair off your body. People don't step out of my way when I walk down the sidewalk. I am tired of talking about gender. I am tired of dissecting identities into hyphenated run-on sentences and getting so twisted in semantics I can't even remember the humanity I come from in the first place. I am tired. I'm tired of knowing that this isn't over. I am tired of knowing that how many of my brothers and sisters and zothers and zisters don't even have a bathroom to shit in. I'm tired. I'm forgetting the words. I'm tired. I'm tired of knowing that this isn't over. Oh, man. You know what? I think I lost it. I'm sorry. That was such a tease.
That was such a tease.
I
still
lost it.
Did a great job.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, come see me in next time I read, which might be in February, but I'm not sure, so I'm not officially announcing that right now. But you know, I'll do that better next time. Can I do something else that like redeem myself
by
right
all
now?
Means okay. Go for it.
Thank you.
I like the to be continued.
Like ... it ends. I'm not going to tell you how it ends. It ends like, yeah. Okay. Oh man. All right. What am I going to read here? All right. I'm just going to read this one that's been my favorite lately that I just keep reading over and over again. And it's going to be like, you know, a broken record soon, but that's fine. Okay. I'm just going to open it to the page in the book just in case, because now I feel nervous. I don't know if I know where the page is, though. Am I running out of time?
Yeah, we got about...
Okay, this will be my last one, maybe.
All right, that's a great idea.
But probably. They're going to kick us out of here.
I'm going to sit in here and read poetry all night, whether this microphone is on or not. There it is. Okay. Regarding the full circle and the concept of time, I don't believe in you. Things just don't seem to come around that way. Life is too oblong for that. The only thing I still remember from math class is that you can't make a perfect circle without a compass, and I never know what direction I'm going. Point A never really looks quite like point A when you come back to it, but we measure our roundness in degrees, like time in minutes passing, like if we wait long enough, everything will come around full circle, all perfect and round. But what if Father Time is really just a broken old man wondering what it is you're waiting for? What if Father Time is a trapezoid, all sharp angles and uneven lines? What if he takes turns that don't make sense or happen too soon, and he never stops to ask for directions? And there you are, waiting for things to come full circle, for the timing to make sense. Building clocks out of shapes that nothing can stand on and that no one can draw perfectly anyway.
Beautiful.
I love it. Brenda, do you have something real short that you can share?
I do. Yes, real short. Oh, to be a young Johnny Depp. Today, I want to be a young Johnny Depp. Smoking a cigarette cross-legged on the train tracks, sweat and sun plastered to my forehead. I want to glare, shoulders hunched against the junction of here and nowhere. Let the scissored hands of time shear this life like fine angora, past and future. Before the fear and loathing, before the loss of every selfishness evaporating like tracks on a horizon. Imagine smoke, cocks one finger, beckons you closer.
Awesome. Real quick before we go, if you could save three things in a burning house, what would you... Your house is on fire. Three things. What would you take with you, ladies?
My cat, my new blazer, and my koala onesie.
Okay.
Is this my house that I currently live in right now?
Sure, yes.
Nothing Leah panics in Burns' life.
Probably, that's probably true. No, I go to school for acupuncture, and I have a certain book that I would bring with me that tells me all the magical things. And two more things, I don't know, I'm running out of time and panicking.
Ran out of time.
I would bring a pillow and my favorite pair of socks.
Thank you very much. This has been Talking Earth on KBOO FM, and my guests have been Brenda Talby and Leah Rayner. Have a wonderful night, everyone. Woo-hoo.
I'm Sonny Blechinger, KBOO's Artist in Residence for 2015. I hope you'll tune in on October 29th at 10 p.m. for my radio play, The Pool. It's about four people that happen to swim at the same public pool every week. And even though they don't know each other, they've mostly decided they don't like each other. And you get to hear their thoughts.
I don't know what I was thinking. Swimmy, this is horrible.
So please tune in for the world premiere, really, of The Pool on October 29th at 10 p.m. It'll be fun, like swimming.
People love swimming in the crystal plunge.
God, that creepy lifeguard is still staring at me.
Okay, let's just put the stuff down and...
This is my time. My time in the pool.